Everybody come here, gather round. Welcome to the freak show, the best in town. What the hell's wrong with me? I don't get along with anybody, honestly. I've been living in my own head, constantly thoughts jumbled round. Think I need a new lobotomy. Wait, all these thoughts.
Part 1.
You will hear a woman asking a shop assistant about DVD players. You now have 30 seconds to read questions 1 to 4.
Hello, I'm interested in buying a DVD player. Can you help me, as I don't know very much about them?
Of course. We sell quite a range. Actually, we're doing a customer survey at the moment, so I wonder if I could fill in this form about you, and that will actually help me to advise you on the best DVD player for you.
Oh, okay.
First of all, your occupation.
Student.
Okay. Then, have you already got a DVD player?
No, I've never had one before.
Uh-huh. And how much do you think you want to spend on a player?
I'm not sure, really. But I have got a budget. My friend said I should allow about £100. But I can't afford over £85, so that's what I'm working on.
Mm-hmm. And do you watch DVDs very often?
Depends what you mean by often. I don't know what the norm is. Is it about 2 a week? I suppose I watch 3 a month. That's enough for me.
Yes. What sort of films do you like watching then? Action movies?
Not really. Oh. My boyfriend always insists we watch science fiction movies, but I prefer thrillers. Something to get your teeth into.
Okay. Just one more. Do you watch other DVDs? Ones that are not films, like music or something?
Not much, because I don't want to spend the money on something I can watch on TV. But I occasionally rent out comedy programmes, and I fight with my boyfriend over all the sports DVDs he watches.
You now have 30 seconds to read questions 5 to 10.
Okay, let me explain a bit to you about the DVD players that are in your price range. First, there's the DB30, which has only got basic features, but it is a bargain at £69. Now, all the DVDs come with an after-sales service that starts when the guarantee runs out. As it's so cheap, the DB30 comes with a limited after-sales service, as it only includes parts. You would have to pay for most of the repair.
Seems okay.
Then, a slight grade up from that is the XL643. This comes with an additional feature in that it has an extra button allowing you to record. That's quite useful.
Oh, yes. That would mean spending less on DVDs to watch.
Yes. So you'd make the extra money back on it that it costs. Let me see how much it is. Yes. That one's actually reduced at the moment from £79 to
£71.99. Oh.
I think it's worth the extra myself.
And is that the same level of after-sales service as the other one?
Well, you get a bit more for your money because what we're offering is a discount on labour. so you don't pay the full price if you have to call an engineer out.
I see.
Then the last one is this Tri-X 24. It's a very good player, and you can use it to listen to your CDs as well as watch DVDs.
It looks nice, but I bet it's expensive.
No, it's not top of the range. Let's see. Yes, it's £94. But what you have to remember is that that includes insurance, so you don't have to pay extra for that. And it comes with a guarantee that's valid for 3 years, as opposed to the usual one. What do you think?
Maybe.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear a speech given to new employees at a museum. You have 30 seconds to look at questions 11 to 13.
Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Peter Myers, and on behalf of everybody here at Stevensbridge Dungeons, I would like to welcome you all to our entertainment team. This year, the hiring process was especially competitive, and it might interest you all to know that for every position there were almost 30 applicants, so you really are the best of the best. In a moment, I will take you on a tour of the museum so you can get an idea of what the space is like. But first of all, I would like to show you around the staff room. Our staff room is located at the back of the building over here. You will notice that there are two entrances to the staff room. One leads to the room we're in now, which is the main and oldest dungeon here at Stevensbridge, which we have turned into the museum. This is where you will greet the new visitors, and also where the tour throughout the dungeons will begin. I should mention now that we only ever send visitors through as part of a group. So even on the busy days, you will still get roughly 10 minutes of free time between each group. Make sure you use that time wisely, because you'll need to get straight back into character as soon as it's over.
Now look at questions 14 to 20.
Right, follow me and I'll show you the layout of the museum. From the museum, we can pass through this door near the interactive display into the staff room. From here, you can see the steps at the far side in the opposite corner that lead outside into Berwick Street. When you arrive for a shift, it will be much easier for you all to come in the Berwick Street entrance directly down the steps to the staff room. If you come in through the main visitor entrance, it will take you longer to get past security. As you can all see, there are lockers on your right-hand side. They should be big enough for you to put your bags and coats in. You'll get given keys later that work with any of the lockers in here. Over on the other side, past the lockers, is our most exciting area. This is where our wardrobe and makeup will take place. Every shift, you will be transformed from normal people into grotesque medieval prisoners. If you're lucky, you get to be the jailer, but even they rarely bathed in those days. Of course, some of you might consider yourselves method actors, but please do try to shower before your shift. We don't want to give visitors an experience that's too authentic. Now, we do have a staff shower here if you really need it. It is located next to the staff toilets, which are unisex. I hope nobody has too much of a problem with that. Unfortunately, dungeons were not really designed with comfort in mind. You can find the bathroom at the other end of the room from the makeup area. There is also another toilet for the public, concealed just to the right of the door into this room. Let's move back into the museum. We have three main sections down here. The first one you pass into when you leave the staff room is the museum. This is where all the useful information can be found, such as dates, number of prisoners, and the kinds of torture that were used. I know it's a lot of information to take in on your first day, but try to learn as much of it as you can. Even though you'll mostly be in character, visitors might want to ask you some questions, and it would be great if you could tell them more about the dungeons. I think it would be more interesting if visitors could learn directly from you rather than having to read about it. As you can see, on the left we have an interactive display for children, and on the right we have a photo booth. This was the original dungeon, first built in 1435. Now, let's pass through into the main dungeon that was added during the Tudor period in around 1570. You might be able to feel that the air is a lot damper and cooler here. That is because we are now beneath the River Stevens. This is primarily the room in which most of you will be working. This is where many high-profile religious figures were held, sometimes for years on end. Depending on the roles you will be playing, you can either be chained up, free to roam, or, if you're a jailer, wandering between prisoners to keep an eye on them. Now we will pass into our third and final section, the prison cells. Over here, you can see there are some wooden stocks and a fake gibbet. Don't worry, I can see a couple of you looking concerned. You don't need to reenact any of the torture scenes for visitors. One person each shift will play the jailer in here, where you will give a speech to the group about some of the more notable prisoners to stay here in the past. This is usually the end of the tour, but some visitors will certainly want to ask you more questions at this point, so please try your best to make yourselves available. Help them by answering any questions they have. Also, feel free to guide the visitors through the museum if you see that they're going the wrong way. This concludes our introduction to your new workplace. If you'll please follow me, I will get you all issued with your keys and some information about the dungeons that you can take home with you to study. I will also introduce you to your shift supervisor, Alice Stiles, and you can ask her any questions you may have about your roles.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part three.
Part three.
You will hear a student, Penny, talking to two friends, Ray and Louise, about a television competition Ray has entered called Travel Documentary. Before you hear the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 26. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 26.
Hi, haven't seen you two in ages. What have you been up to?
Hi, Penny. Ray is really excited. He's just been shortlisted for travel documentary. He could be off travelling around the world for 3 months.
Travel documentary? What's that?
You've never heard of it? Don't you watch TV?
Well, actually, no, hardly ever. Especially since I've started working on my thesis. I don't have time to breathe, let alone watch TV. So what's this all about, Ray?
Well, actually, it's a competition run by Public TV. It involves my two great loves, travel and filmmaking.
Is it that program where people are sent around the world making documentary videos? I have heard of it. Fantastic! So you've been chosen.
Not yet. I'm one of 34 selected for an interview next week, so I've made it through the first cut.
Yeah, there were over 200 applicants from around the country. Pretty amazing, hey?
Well, I've been lucky so far.
What's the next stage?
13 are chosen from the interview to do a 4-week training course in documentary filmmaking. Then, the 8 finalists get sent off with a video camera to travel around the world.
Sounds incredible. What's the catch?
The catch is that every 2 weeks you have to send in a 10-minute video from a different part of the world. It's broadcast on TV along with the work of 3 of the other competitors and judged by a panel of experts and the TV audience. So you're under a lot of pressure.
Wow, I guess so. You mean you're on television every 2 weeks?
Yep, that's right. But first, I have to be selected.
Do you have to have any filmmaking experience to apply?
Some background in photography or video making helps, but you're not supposed to be an expert. In fact, you can't apply if you've already worked in filmmaking. We all get the same 4-week course, so we start with the same skills.
Can you go anywhere in the world you want?
Each competitor makes up his or her own travel plans and has to get them approved.
Before the conversation continues, you have some time to look at questions 27 to 30. Now, as the conversation continues, answer questions 27 to 30.
Have you talked with anyone else who has done it?
As a matter of fact, just last week, I met Sarah Price, a girl from here who did it last year.
What did she have to say about it?
She said it was the most amazing experience of her life, but it was really tough at times.
I think you'd have to be really brave to take off like that alone with so much responsibility. It's not like going on a holiday, is it?
No. 2 weeks in a country often where you can't speak the language to find a story, film it, organise all the editing. Then you're off to a completely different part of the world to start all over again. Pretty exhausting, but exciting too.
What a way to see the world.
What about Sarah Price? Did she have any bad experiences?
She said the worst part was when she got some mysterious fever in Mongolia and thought she might have to be sent home. Fortunately, it got better, but she said it was scary to feel really ill when you're alone so far away.
So what made you want to apply?
When I saw the program on TV a while ago, I thought, this is for me. I've always wanted to travel, but needed to work for a year before I could even think about it. Then a new series started up. I thought, now's my chance.
Don't you think you'll be lonely?
I don't think I'll have time to be homesick. I'm more worried about having too much to do and not enough time to get things organised.
So we might be watching you on television in the next few months.
I hope so, if I'm lucky.
When will you know for sure?
They choose the final eight in March. A month later, you're on your way.
So do you have to pay anything?
Nothing. It's all paid for. Course, camera, flights, accommodation and in-country travel. The budget is pretty tight, though. No extras.
I sure hope you get it. Then I'll be finding time to watch at least one program on television every week.
That is the end of part three.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part four.
Part four.
You will hear a man talking on the radio about dogs which help people with their work.
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
Welcome to this week's edition of Countrywide. And today, we're taking a look at a number of different breeds of working dogs. And here to report on the dogs with jobs is Kevin Thornhill.
Thanks, Joanne. Well, yes, dogs with jobs is the subject of today's program. Dogs have earned themselves a reputation over the centuries for being extremely loyal. And here's a little story which illustrates just how loyal they are. Just outside the country town of Gundagai in Australia is a statue built to commemorate a dog. A dog which sat waiting for his owner to return to the spot where he'd left him. Well, the story, which was immortalised in a song, has it that the poor dog died waiting for his master, 5 miles from Gundagai, which is where they built the statue. Now that's what I call loyalty. Well, because of their loyalty and also their ability to learn practical skills, dogs can be trained to do a number of very valuable jobs. Perhaps the most well-known of working dogs is the Border Collie Sheepdog. Sheepdogs which work in unison with their masters need to be smart and obedient, with a natural ability to herd sheep. Some farmers say that their dogs are so smart that they not only herd sheep, they can count them too. Another much-loved working dog is the guide dog, trained to work with the blind. Guide dogs, usually Labradors, need to be confident enough to lead their owner through traffic and crowds, but they must also be of a gentle nature. It costs a great deal of money to train a dog for this very valuable work, but the guide dog associations in the UK, America and Australia receive no government assistance, so all the money comes from donations. Another common breed of work dog is the German Shepherd. German Shepherds make excellent guard dogs and are also very appropriate as search and rescue dogs, working in disaster zones after earthquakes and avalanches. These dogs must be tough and courageous to cope with the arduous conditions of their work, and so that they can be sent anywhere in the world to assist in disaster relief operations, effective dogs and their trainers are now listed on an international database. When you arrive at an airport here, you may be greeted in the baggage hall by a detector dog, wearing a little red coat bearing the words quarantine. These dogs are trained to sniff out fresh fruit as well as meat and even live animals hidden in people's bags. In order to be effective, a good detector dog must have an enormous food drive. In other words, they must really love their food. At Sydney Airport, where there are 10 detector dogs working full-time, they stop about 80 people a month trying to bring illegal goods into the country. And according to their trainers, they very rarely get it wrong. Another famous working dog is the Husky. Huskies, which originally came from Siberia, have been used for decades as a means of transport on snow, particularly in Antarctica, where they have played an important role. Huskies are well adapted to harsh conditions and they enjoy working in a team. But the Huskies have all left Antarctica now because the international treaty prohibits their use in the territory, as they are not native animals. Many people were sad to see the dogs leave Antarctica, as they had been vital to the early expeditions and earned their place in history along with the explorers.
That is the end of part four.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.